everyone. Welcome to the ESPN Media Conference Call with NFL Draft Analyst Mel Kiper, Jr. Today's conference is being recorded. At this time, I'd like to turn things over to Allie Stoneberg. Please go ahead, Allie.
Thank you, Kellyanne. Hello, everyone, and happy NFL Draft season. It was great to see so many familiar names RSVPing for this call, so welcome back. Also, a special welcome to those who are joining us for the first time. Thanks to all of you for being with us on the phone today. As many of you know, I am from Minnesota. I firmly believe in being friendly and Minnesota nice, but to keep this call as efficient as possible, I respectfully ask that you please skip all personal greetings and begin right away with your questions. So today we'll begin with Suzanne Halliburton at the Austin American-Statesman, followed by Justin Rogers with the Detroit News.
Mel, okay, I'm going to ask you about some Big 12 players.
Sure.
I was looking at your mock, and you've got CeeDee Lamb and Kenneth Murray up there really high. Also, Jalen Hurts, I didn't see him in the first round. I hear rumors that he might, try a different position at the combine. Can you kind of talk about the talent, the upper echelon talent in the Big 12?
Yeah, I think you mentioned CeeDee Lamb. He's vying with Jerry Jeudy from Alabama to see who will be the first receiver taken. I have Lamb to the Jets at 11. The way he was so versatile, most of his receptions, majority of his receptions overall, you split them, you say 50% were at the slot spot, 50% were outside. So whether it's slot or outside, he was pretty consistent both ways in terms of his overall production. So, he right there and Jeudy back-to-back at picks at 11 and 12 possibly. And then Kenneth Murray, chiseled frame, very productive player, should run under 4.5 or right around 4.5, you would think. I have him 19 to the Las Vegas Raiders. So those two guys, and of course you mentioned Jalen Hurts, I have like a fourth round grade on him right now as a Taysom Hill type wild card. You can be a creative coordinator like what Sean Payton does with Taysom, get him involved, give defensive coordinators different looks, different things to prepare for. I think that will be Jalen Hurts' role in the NFL, will be that Taysom Hill role. And I could see him coming off the board in around, around the fourth round area.
We'll go to Justin Rogers and then Eric Delilah with the Denver Broncos.
Hey, Mel, we don't see many quarterbacks selected in the first five picks, but early consensus on Akuda, he could be one of those rare exceptions. Just curious how he stacks up to Ramsey, Patrick Peterson, Denzel Ward, the other guys that have been selected in the top five the last decade.
Yeah, he's going to have as high a grade. Patrick Peterson, I had number one on the board when he came out of LSU, and the other guys you mentioned had high grades. Okuda is right up there. Right now you think about, third, fourth on the big board, right behind with Tua, depending upon the medical for Tua. You could be looking at the third best player. So I've said all before when we were doing the mock that if you're picking fourth like the Giants are, you got to get a guy, or the Lions, you got to get a guy in your top group. And certainly Okuda will be, I think, on most boards, one of the top three to four players. So if you look at Chase Young once, I may have him too, right behind Chase Young. So his teammate at Ohio State. So he would make sense for the Lions at three. They need a corner. The Giants at four need a corner. I don't think he's getting past there. He's a guy that's a complete corner. He tackles well. He's aggressive, which is important in today's NFL. So I think Okuda is going to go very, very early.
We'll go to Eric Delilah with the Denver Broncos, followed by Mike Chappell with CBS Indianapolis.
Hey, Mel, you got Josh Jones going to Denver. How'd you weigh a tackle versus a receiver there, and did the depth of the wide receiver class make an impact on that decision?
It did. There's just no depth of tackle. That's the issue. They're really, after the top group, you're not going to find one unless you can develop a Sadiq Charles at LSU, or you can develop a Matt Peart at Connecticut or an Austin Jackson at USC. The top five are pretty defined. Where wide receiver, you can find guys that may be better second-round picks than some of the guys going in the first round. I like a lot of these second-round receivers. So I think that was the debate. I almost gave them T. Higgins, and Henry Ruggs III would have been the two that would have been considered. I had Jeudy and Lamb gone. So I would have gotten down to T. Higgins from Clemson. I have to see what he runs, because 40 time will be important for him. And Henry Ruggs III, I think the speed's going to get him into that 22 range. I think 15 may be a little high. So that's why I went with the guy that had the higher rating. And then Jones, right tackle, left tackle. A lot of these guys can play guard initially. If you find you're okay at tackle, then you can move a guy inside the guard. We've seen that in the NFL. Even going back to Jonathan Ogden, he didn't start out at left tackle, he started out at guard. So With Jones, I think a left tackle, right tackle, guard, he gives you that kind of versatility. And he does have a grade based on after the Senior Bowl practices and a great year he had at Houston. He has a grade in that mid-first round area.
Next up is Mike Chappell and then Daryl Slater with the Newark Star-Ledger.
Yeah, Mel, this is a similar question. You've got Kinlaw to the Colts at 13. Do you, and again, unless they move up to get a quarterback, which is unlikely, do you just see that Kinlaw is the better value at 13 as opposed to the next best quarterback, the next best receiver, or even left tackle?
Yeah, Mike, I did. And certainly I don't know if he'll be there at 13. That's why he was the obvious choice when you got down. He couldn't drop any further. It would have been down to Tampa Bay or Indy at 13, 14. I had him going to Jacksonville at 9 in Mach 1.0, but things changed since then with Simmons getting pushed down to that spot. But Kinlaw's right there with Derek Brown. So if Derek Brown from Auburn's going number 7, you could make a strong case that Kinlaw can't be far after. So to get him at 13 would be obviously a good pick there. I mentioned the receivers. He does have a higher grade than the receivers that would be on the board after Lamb and Judy, who I have going right before Kinlaw in that mock, Mike, as you saw. So that's why. And a quarterback, yeah, I'm with you. I don't see Herbert being there. I know Todd thinks he will be. I don't. We'll see how that plays out. If he were there, obviously he'd be an intriguing guy to look at. I don't know if they would trade up to get him. They'd have to go probably into the top 6. But I do think if Kinlaw is there, that's a guy that I think would help them immensely along the interior of that defensive line.
We'll go to Daryl Slater and then Steven Larson with State of the U.
Hey, Mel, when you look at the Jets, a two-parter on them, how do you compare Lamb and Judy? Why do you like Lamb a little bit better right now in terms of what he does? And then also in terms of the Jets, which offensive tackles do you think could potentially be there for them at that spot? And do you think that would be a possible pick considering their needs?
Yeah, it would be. There's not. I thought about that, and I did the last one. The same thing. Which one will be there that is attractive to them? And of course, Becton from Louisville, I have going 10 to Cleveland. I have Wirfs to Arizona. I have Wills to the Chargers. So that would get down to Andrew Thomas, who's dropped a little bit and needs some technique work. Plays a little high, so he's got to get down a little lower. And those quick bend guys might give him a little bit of trouble. So he's got to improve that technique a bit. But he's got a lot of talent. He works hard. And then Josh Jones from Houston would be the one that I thought about there, but that might be a little early. So I went with a higher rated guy at a position of need, a receiver, big need for Sam Darnold, and CeeDee Lamb and Jerry Judy, they both have the same grade. As I said before, Lamb, a little more versatile, and that he can be a slot guy or be an outside wide receiver threat. Judy is a real good route runner, but you got to remember, he had a lot of help there in Alabama. Devontae Smith would have been a first-round pick if he came out this year. He'll certainly be a first next year. Henry Ruggs is right in there. Jalen is in the first round. Jalen Waddle's a guy who's not even draft eligible, was going to be a high pick. So there were so many other guys to worry about. The college teams have maybe one corner tops. They don't have 2, 3, 4. So I think he'll have to adjust to teams pressing him more, getting in his face more, being a little more aggressive at the line of scrimmage with him than they were at the collegiate level, where Lamb was the guy that everybody knew. You identified Lamb, and they still couldn't stop him. So that's why I just gave, in this mock, a slight edge to Lamb. But in terms of grade, they're both equal.
We'll go to Steven Larson and then Aaron McMahon with MLive.
Well, who do you expect is going to be the first Miami Hurricane player to be drafted, and which former Cane stands to gain the most from the NFL Combine?
Well, I think when you look at we've talked about over the last few years some guys that were going to be maybe in that mid-round area, no first-round caliber players. I look at it right now, and I think Trayvon Hill has upside, a transfer from Virginia Tech, because of the pass rush everybody wants. And he has flashed that. I thought he'd be a little more consistent with that, more productive with that this year. But I think he's the one, like I say, because of what everybody wants and everybody needs, he may be the guy that comes off the board. I mean, you think about Shaq Quarterman and his production. But again, it's not 1985-95. Those types of linebackers now, you got to be an all-around player. So I think Quarterman's more of a mid-round guy. But I do think if you look at what the league is all about now, Trayvon Hill kind of fits that.
We'll go to Aaron McMahon and then Brooks Kubina with The Advocate.
Mel, I wanted to ask you about a couple of Michigan guys. First off, Josh Uche, outside linebacker. How do you think he benefited from the Senior Bowl? And then Ben Bredesen, offensive lineman. Where's his ceiling in your mind?
Yeah, I think Uche is a solid second-round pick. The pass rush ability he has, the bend off the edge, obviously Senior Bowl week and all that. Somebody even said I wouldn't be shocked if he jumped into the late first because pass rushers go. But I'd say second round, at worst third round. But I'm thinking second round for Uche. Bredesen, to me, if you look at the pure guards, and there's a lot of these guys can be versatile guys inside, outside, but of the pure guards, I think he's arguably the best in this draft. So I would say probably third round area. Maybe second, but I'd say third round for Bredesen, and I'd say second round for Uche.
We'll go to Brooks Kadena and then Jim Wyatt with Titans Online.
Hey, Mel. Where do you see this LSU class and its place in the NFL draft's history? And I see you've got five drafts in the first round. Could it set some records?
Yeah, it's so many guys, and some of these guys opted to go back, which is great for LSU to have that happen, where you get somebody returning. But it really emerged this year with Joe Burrow, because Joe Burrow had a late round grade going into this season. Now you have the number one pick, which kind of illuminates the whole thing for the LSU draft, because now you got the number one guy. Now you have Jefferson, who developed this year into a first round caliber receiver. He was not that last year. Remember, he had some drops and was inconsistent, didn't have nearly the production last year. Jefferson, that with 54 catches last year, jumped way up with that and a touchdown. So I think Burrow and the New Orleans Saints offense with Joe Brady really helped Burrow and helped Jefferson. Clyde Edwards Hilaire emerged. Remember, Brissett was their top rusher. He doubled up with what Edwards Hilaire had in terms of productivity, touchdowns and yards. And all of a sudden, here's Edwards Hilaire doing a great job. Cushenberry emerged at center. Sadiq Charles is a developmental tackle. Chaisson came back from the injury and really finished strong late in the year, with most of his sacks coming late in the season. Patrick Queen wasn't even considered a guaranteed start. He was a guy, all around guy, and he emerged as their most improved defensive player. Dave Aranda had said that. He was their most improved player. Now, Delpit didn't have the year expected because of the ankle, so there's kind of mixed opinion on him. Christian Fulton, borderline first. Jacob Phillips is a mid-round guy. So there's, like as you said, and you also see, I think, Thaddeus Moss, obviously Randy's son, go in that mid-range as well. Sullivan, who didn't even get much production at all, is a late-round possibility. So you can go on and on. And Lawrence up front on the D-line, Divinity. I mean, it is an incredible class of prospects from the first round all the way through the late rounds. They're going to be well-represented.
We'll go to Jim Wyatt and then Jim McBride with the Boston Globe.
Mel, you've been consistent with your Titans pick at 29. Why do you like Gross Matos there? And maybe who could some other options be at number 29?
Yeah, that's where I was looking at maybe a Zach Bond from Wisconsin, who kind of Mike Vrabel type, coming out of Ohio State, is that combo guy. Zach Bond out of Wisconsin, Big Ten, combo guy, productive, high intensity, highly motivated type of player, has some versatility. But getting after the quarterback, I think that's something you need. And whether it's Zach Bond from Wisconsin or Gross Matos from Penn State, I think they're then they hustle. I think that's what Gross Matos with Vrabel. You like the guys that will hustle and be team-oriented, and Gross Matos is that kind of guy as well. So both Big Ten, both guys that I could see help that Titan defense.
We'll go to Jim McBride and then Anthony Dasher with UGA Sports.
Mel, I know you have Jacob Eason going in the first round of the Patriots. I'm wondering what kind of quality pass catches you might see with their three third-round picks available.
Well, I think when you look at the guys that could drop that far with the depth at receiver, that's where you get into Lynn Bowden Jr., Kentucky. You would get into, at that point, Antonio Gandy-Golden from Liberty, Van Jefferson from Florida, Devin Duvernay from Texas, Chase Claypool, Notre Dame, Brandon Ayuk, Arizona State, K.J. Hill, Ohio State. That's the guys I think you could – Denzel Mims from Baylor. Those Colin Johnson, Texas, that could be some of your third-round guys. Courtney Davis, Texas A&M. I don't think Jalen Reagor is getting to the third. I think he's a two. He's going to be one of the fastest players at the combine from TCU. I say Brandon Ayuk from Arizona State could. Michael Pittman Jr., I think, is more of a two, but if he got into the third because of lack of great speed, he would be a good pick there as well. So it's going to be, I think, 25 receivers. numbers in the first three and a half rounds, 18 to 20 in the first couple, going into three and a half to four, you'll probably have 25 receivers taken. So this is going to be maybe historic. I'd have to go back and check the numbers if we have, when we've had that many, but I could see eight receivers go in the second round, maybe five in the first and eight in the second.
Anthony Dasher is up, and then Mark Emmert with the Des Moines Register.
What challenges, Mel, do you see Jake Fromm facing at the combine, and what are teams going to need to see from him as they make their evaluations?
Only thing's going to be on display there, he's going to have to show that, is the necessary arm strength, because that's going to determine, is he Aaron Murray, is he Andy Dalton? You know, that's what I think everybody's trying to figure out. You hear Aaron, well, maybe he's more like Aaron Murray. Well, maybe he's more like Andy Dalton, okay? So if he's Andy Dalton, you're talking about a early second round type quarterback. If you're Aaron Murray, you're talking about a later round quarterback who's now playing in the XFL. So, again, you know, that's where people are going to have to make that decision based on arm strength. We know he has the smarts. We know he has the leadership. We know he's an accurate passer. Forget the number. He lost all his receivers going into this year. So you know he can do all that, but is the arm good enough? And that's what people are going to be really scrutinizing with Fromm going through this whole draft process leading up into late April, which will determine whether he's a second-round pick or whether he's a fourth- or fifth-round pick. I think after all said and done, he may fall in the third round, but the second round's a possibility if that arm showcases to be well enough.
We'll go to Mark Emmert and then Alex Byington with the Montgomery Advertiser.
Hey, Mel, I wanted to get your thoughts on the Iowa quarterback, Nate Stanley. Like, where do you see him going in the draft, and what are kind of his strengths and weaknesses at this point?
Well, he started out the year looking like he would be in the second, third round discussion. He was certainly a guy that, when you look at what he was able to do at Iowa in terms of just dropping back in that pocket and scanning the field and making some accurate throws, you thought, well, if he can improve and keep making strides, he could end up being a second round pick. But I kind of leveled off a little bit. I guess you could make that argument this year from last year, just looking at the numbers across the board, looking at how he performed. You know, he needs to be protected by a really good offensive line. He does run a little hot and cold. Some of his head-scratching throws are still there. But, he's got the arm talent. He's got tons of experience in that Iowa offense, which is going to prepare him very effectively for the NFL. I think instead of a second, third-round pick, which you thought back in August was maybe possible, I could see him being a fifth to seventh-round pick by the time we get to late April. That certainly has a chance to maybe develop down the road into a backup starter. We'll see. I don't know if it'll go that far, but I'd say in the fifth to seventh round area, he could come off the board. He's, like I said, his grade did drop a little bit, but he's got the arm talent. That's what could get you drafted.
Just a quick apology. I know many of you had long wait times on hold, so I am sorry for that. We're moving through as many people as we can, so thank you so much for your patience. Next up, we'll go to Alex Byington and then Jameson Hensley with ESPN Baltimore.
Hey, Mel. I had a couple questions about two Alabama players. You've already kind of touched on a little bit, but Henry Ruggs, you mentioned maybe mid to late first round. How much is his status dependent on running an elite time at the combine? And then second question on Tua, how much do you think how are teams weighing that medical side of it with his elite talent?
Yeah, that's the balance that you have to strike there. And I think it's the medical that's going to have to sign off. The medical people, your experts in that field with three lower extremity injuries, the ankles, both ankles and then the hip, it's going to determine everything. Whether he's a third, fourth pick in the draft on somebody trading up, whether he goes to Miami at five, the Chargers at six, or he drops down to Indianapolis at 13, is going to be determined by the medical. I think he goes in the top five. I think people are going to look at him, and the medical technology has come so far now. The reports so far have been pretty positive. We'll see. But even if you have to medically redshirt him his first year. I made the point yesterday. Hey, Patrick Mahomes didn't play his first year. It wasn't because of injury, because they had Alex Smith. He played in one game. And so people looking at Patrick Mahomes didn't play. So there's nothing wrong with letting his body heal, and that may be needed. In terms of Ruggs, I have him to Buffalo because Josh Allen needs that down-the-field threat. He's got the big arm. He's got Cole Beasley in the slot. He's got John Brown on the outside, but they're both in that 5'9", 5'10 range. Now you get a guy with speed down the field who's adept at that vertical stretch ability, and Josh can throw it as far as anybody. So I think Josh had made tremendous improvement, got him to the playoffs, and I think Ruggs would help that offense and Brian Daboll even more so.
We'll We'll go to Jameson Hensley and then D. Orlando Ledbetter with the Atlanta Journal-Constitution.
Hey, Mel. The Ravens are always trying to look to improve at wide receiver. What wide receivers represent probably the best value at the bottom of the first round?
That's a good question, James. I think it's going to be very tough to find somebody at that point. I just think, you know, Henry Ruggs will be gone. Obviously, anytime you're on 4-2-5, which will be, so you're going to, you know, somewhere John Ross came off the board in the top 10, and he's, I think he's better than John Ross in terms of, you know, the potential that he has moving forward, or at least as good coming into the league as what Ross was. So he's going to go not as high as Ross, but somewhere in the middle to later portion of round one, and not as late as that. I think 22 to 25 would be as far as I could see him dropping, Jameson, on him. So then it gets into K.J. Hamler at Penn State, who, if he was more consistent, would be a guaranteed first. Justin Jefferson, LSU, Ben's on his 40 time there. Jalen Rager, TCU, I'm more of a second-round grade on him. So I think linebacker, I gave him Patrick Queen from LSU. I think that would be a great fit for them, you know, because he's a three-down guy. He had a phenomenal year, well-coached with Dave Aranda there. Great tackler. You saw that in the game against Clemson, kind of saved them in a couple of those spots there in that championship game. So I think if Patrick Queen were there, and I've had him there in the mock on both one and two, I think that would supersede maybe a wide receiver that doesn't have a first-round grade.
The Orlando Ledbetter is next, and then Ryan O'Halloran with the Denver Post.
Yes, Mel. What makes Andrew Thomas, the tackle from Georgia, such a good prospect? And then how does this draft stack up with the Falcons' never-ending quest to find some pass rush?
Yeah, in terms of Thomas, first of all, I think just a little more technique work, and I think is great. You know, people thought maybe 7, maybe 8 to Arizona, 10 to Cleveland. I have him 18 to Miami, so he's dropped a little bit in technique work. You know, he's to improve just a bit, but he's a hard worker, and he gives you everything he has, and he's going to keep getting better and better. So I think you know, the ceiling is high enough where he could be a mid-first-round pick, still at worst a late-first-round pick. In terms of Atlanta, I have them taking a pass rusher in A.J. Epinesa. He's got sack production over the last 2 years consistently. He was a five-star recruit coming out of high school. Rarely does Kirk Ferentz get those kind of players. He develops great players, but they don't usually come in. And Epinesa came in with that high grade, and he performed. They can move him inside. You can kick him inside in situations there, get him over the center guard. So he gives you versatility, great effort. Either Epinesa or Clavon Chaisson from LSU, I think, would be possibilities there for Atlanta needing that pass rusher.
Ryan O'Halloran is up, and then Mark Gaughan with the Buffalo News.
Hey, Mel, two receivers I want to get your take on. You mentioned Higgins from Clemson earlier and also Shenault from Colorado. What are your take on those two guys?
Higgins is interesting. You know, he's 6'4". He's got great, great ball skills, but he doesn't, you know, separate. He doesn't have that explosive burst out of his break. I'd like to see a little more physicality in those jump ball, power forward type situations with him. How he runs will be important. Some think he'll run 4.55. We'll see. If he runs in that 4.52 to 4.55 range, he'll be certainly in the mid-first. I think Philadelphia is a possibility. Buffalo would be a possibility at 22. Philadelphia 21, Buffalo at 22. Shenault, I like. Love his versatility. I have thought about Buffalo with him because on those jet sweeps, Brian Daboll loves that type of guy. He can come around and flip him the ball, and he can do some damage. He can get him in the backfield in the Wildcat. He's done that. He did have the injury, and I think people want to see you still, I think, evaluate him as to whether he is a late one. I keep hearing second, so I took him out of the late first, but put him in the second. But he's borderline. He's one of those borderline guys I could see very easily going between 22 and 32, and worst-case scenario, go early to mid-second round.
We'll go to Mark Gaughan and then James Crapia with the Oregonian.
Now, what are you hearing about from how teams feel about the combine changes, the changes in schedule and the interview time and limitation schedule?
Well, we're going to be there again. I don't glean a lot from the combine myself. You know, I was there, and you know, you watch it, and watching guys run four. Some teams are keeping some of their coaches back to evaluate film and spend that time more wisely because you're going to get all the numbers. Now, the interviews are important, and then they have their numbers, and they have all that, and who they're bringing in the interview, and the medical is critical, is key to all this. And you get those medical reports, teams all being there getting that. But the interview is something, obviously, we can't get into, but that's huge for these teams. Watching them work out, watching a guy throw against there, doing all the drills, you know, watching it, you don't glean a lot from that. But, you know, it's good to be there. It's good atmosphere. It's great to watch football, anything you get. So I will be there all next week. But in terms of at night, you know, as opposed to when it was, whatever time of the day it is, you're there, you're doing, you're watching it, and you're covering it. So I don't think the time change matters to me and matters to anybody in the league. But like I say, I think just getting all the numbers are important, and then the pro days come up after that. But and I think the three cones, and I think the test explosiveness with the broad and the vertical, there's some, and see how strong guys are, which tells you a lot about how they prepare and how serious they are about their work. Those bench press reps determine a little bit about that as well. So there's things you take from every drill and every number you get. So yeah, it's important, but I don't, the changes don't impact anything for me at all.
We'll go to James Crapia and then Andrew Mentok with Blue and Gold Illustrated.
Mel, so you moved Justin Herbert up in your latest mock. How much is for him is going to be dependent on Tua and the medical outcome there and how teams view him, and what can Justin do himself throughout this draft process to improve his stock, if at all?
Yeah, that's because he went from 6 to 5. It didn't move up much. He went from the Chargers to the Dolphins. That was the whole Tua being optimistic about the medical. If Tua drops to 5, then the Chargers are sitting there at 6. With a possibility to get Justin. I think that, yeah, there's nothing you can do when, obviously, games are over. I think showing that you have that it factor. I think the most important thing is show that it factor. Show that you can command a room, that you have that aura about you. That you walk into a room, guys say, hey, you're a leader. If they know that, like I said, with Josh Allen, was a tremendous competitor, come out of Wyoming, most competitive player Craig Bowe ever coached. That's, you hear the Buffalo Bill players say, hey, Josh is going to lead. He led him to the playoffs. Hey, this guy's going to take us to the Super Bowl. We just follow Josh's lead, and we know, he's going to win a lot of games and win big for us. And that's what I think Justin Herbert has to show. We know he has the athletic, physical talent, the arm talent, the athleticism, the mobility. We know how intelligent he is. We know what a great kid he is. Is he instinctive enough as a quarterback? And does he have, let's say, that it factor to be that incredible, off-the-charts competitor that a lot of times separates the good ones from the average ones, the great ones from the good ones, the average to good from the bus? A lot of times is, what level of competitor are you? And I think that's what teams want to really find out here.
We'll go to Andrew Mentok and then Bill Rabinowitz with the Columbus Dispatch.
Your thoughts on two Notre Dame players who have received some buzz over the last couple months, first-round buzz over the last couple months, and Julian Okwara and Cole Kmet, and then see if there's any other Irish players that your interest piqued heading into the combine.
Yeah, as a Notre Dame fan as I am, you watch these guys. Julian Okwara, of course, with the injury, I think he would have been a solid second-round pick, and we'll see how that all turns out. But I think Cole Kmet's the most interesting for me as far as the first round. Had him in there earlier, took him out. The questions about speed will be answered at the combine pro day. If he runs in the 4.7s, I think he's in the first-round discussion. 4.8s puts him in the second-round area. So the Cole Kmet's the one to keep an eye on there. Chase Claypool as well, has he test with his size, will be important. Same thing with Tony Jones, the running back. And of course, on the defensive side, I mentioned Okwara, but Troy Pride Jr. He should be 4.3 speed, should be able to showcase 4.3 speed. Good Senior Bowl week. By the time we get to late April, I think Troy Pride could be a solid second round draft choice.
We'll go to Bill Rabinowitz and then Angelique Shingelis with the Detroit News.
I know I'd love to ask you about all the Ohio State players, but I just want to ask you about the two defensive backs who are not Jeffrey Okuda. Can you give me your assessment of Damon Arnett and also Jordan Fuller?
Arnett playing through that injury, I mean, the way he performed, how aggressive he can be and the plays he can make in cover, I like him. I've liked him all along. I think if he gets lost in the shuffle a bit, he could be a really good in that third-round discussion type area. Really like everything about him. And like I say, to play through and have the injury and yet go out there and perform the way he did, a testimony to him, his character, and just how he goes about his business. In terms of Fuller, the center fielder, I have a day three grade on him. I think Hamilton on the defensive line, just go to Devon Hamilton, has moved up a little bit. Malik Harrison, linebacker with that versatility, is another guy to keep out. Jonah Jackson, the guard, to transfer. He's moved up a bit. And K.J. Hill, the receiver, is going to be very interesting. And, of course, J.K. Dobbins, running back, would have been a first-round pick based on running ability, but he's got to take care of the ball, and he's got to keep improving as a receiver. Saw a couple drops in that playoff game. So, to me, those are some intriguing guys, but I think certainly a guy like Arnett, he's not going to go where Kudel goes, but he's going to go, I think, somewhere at some point in time, on day two.
Angelique is up, and then Damian Swordlett with the news in advance.
Mel, like Bill, I have a lot of Michigan players I want to ask you about, but if I could just touch on a couple, Shea Patterson, of course, and I saw you have Cesar Ruiz rated up there pretty high, and Peoples Jones. It didn't have great numbers, but...
Yeah, Julie, I think in terms of the group you mentioned, you think about, Bredesen and Runyon and guys, but Ruiz is the one that has moved way up. You know, he played guard, as you know, early on in his career, then solidified, was the anchor, that center spot kept getting better and better. So he's going to have a chance to be a first-round pick. I tried to get him in that 20 to 32 range, got him to Kansas City. Could have even given him a little higher because he does play, has that ability to project the center or guard. So I think he will go as the first of that group. Patterson, I have an drafted free agent grade on. I think he can. It wouldn't surprise me if he was a sixth, seventh round pick. I have a priority free agent grade on him. And as far as Donovan Peoples-Jones, Todd's a little higher on him than I am. I just saw some inconsistencies with him. I want to see him become more of a power forward and take advantage of that size advantage that he has a little bit better than him, more effectively and more consistently than he did. So I have a fourth, fifth round grade on Peoples-Jones. I know Todd has a little bit higher grade on him than I do. And as I said, I think in terms of the defensive side of the ball, Josh Metellus, the safety, it's going to be interesting to see how he runs. I think that will determine where he ends up in the draft.
We're about halfway through. Thank you for your patience. Please stick with us. We're making good progress. Damian, you are up, and then Matt Wenzel with M Live is after that.
You mentioned Antonio Gandy-Golden as a likely third-round draft pick. What did you like out of him as the Senior Bowl, and what can he do better at the combine to potentially raise his stock?
Yeah, I wrote him up during the year on ESPN.com as an under-the-radar guy that I really liked, and he caught my attention. He's got size. He plays physical. He'll catch with it. He'll be a hands catcher. He knows how to use that frame to shield the defender, which I like. He showed a pretty good burst out of his break, which is important for a player his size. And then, as I say, he showed he can play with the big boys. So depending upon his workout numbers, you could see him. I could see him going anywhere between the second and fourth round.
We'll go to Matt Wenzel and then Colleen Kane with the Chicago Tribune.
Hey, Mel, I was wondering what Michigan State guy you think will be their top prospect on the board, and maybe some other guys you think could possibly hear their name called during the draft.
Good question. I think because there's a lot of different players that are going to be in the later round discussion. But the guy I think, of all the players, Kenny Willick just started out the year and looked like an elite guy, and then, of course, didn't get off to the great start, then came on late. But I think the player that I like in terms of grade the best is Josiah Scott, the corner. He's 5'10". He's about, 175. He's the kind of guy, he's aggressive. He's a willing tackler. He's got good awareness. He was a really good recruit coming out. Played right away. He's got pretty good ball skills, 7 career interceptions. I like the tape. I like what I saw of him. I like the way he turns, like the way he flips his hips, like his feet. I think Josiah Scott has a chance. He's going to help the secondary. You know, whether he's a starter, nickel, fourth corner, he's going to be a guy who plays in the league for a long time, I think, as a third to fifth round pick.
Go to Colleen Kane and then Clifton Brown with BaltimoreRavens.com. Hi, Mel. I was wondering, what tight ends do you think might be a good fit for the Bears in the second round?
There's going to be a lot of guys that are going to be in that discussion as second-round tight ends. I think Cole Kmet, the Notre Dame tight end, would be a really good option. Harrison Bryant, Florida Atlantic. This guy just has a feel for getting open, Bryant does. It just has that natural feel for getting open. He hustles. He'll try to be a blocker. He'll try to shield. He's not a guy as explosive as a blocker, but he's a willing blocker. I like him a lot. Senior Bowl week certainly helped him as well. Adam Troutman from Dayton, love what I saw on him on tape. Wrote him up on ESPN.com during the year as well. You can access all that in the ESPN.com archive there. But those are the guys I think would be the most intriguing. More Troutman, more third round. I would say if I'm looking second round, it would be Kmet. Bryant's got more of a third round grade, maybe second. Albert O from Missouri, Equibunum, has a second to third round grade. If he runs 4.55 like it's possible at the combine, he could be in, like I say, solidly in that second round discussion as well.
Clifton Brown is up, and then Alan Saunders with Pittsburgh Sports Now.
Yeah, Mel, with the Ravens at 28, just curious what you think are some of the similarities and differences between Queen and C.J. Mosley. And then if Queen and Murray were both gone, what do you think the Ravens might do at 28?
Well, pass rusher, you know, again, you know, with Gross Matos from Penn State's an interesting guy, but, you know, Lewis from Alabama had some injuries. I think that would be a little high for him. Yeah, I think you can find some of the Ravens have been done a great job with Za'Darius Smith and Matt Judon and going back to Pernell McPhee, finding pass rushers later. And I think that's what they have always been able to do. And I think they can do it this year as well. You'll find somebody in that fifth, sixth, seventh round that can get after the quarterback. I think Queen or Murray, that's a toss-up right now. Murray going at 19, Queen dropping down to Baltimore. They may be gone. But basically right now, Queen, I think because he had that one great year, and of course this is a guy that, you talk about improvement, and Dave Aranda touched on this as the most improved player on a talent-laden defense. And as I said, he was a key entity in that their ability to win a championship because he made some critical plays. And the improvement, as I said, going into the year, he had 40 tackles 2 years ago. So he goes from being a guy who was maybe eighth on the tackle chart to being a guy that was all over the field making plays. So I think Patrick Queen, if he tests well, will not be there for Baltimore. If he tests just okay to average, to take good, I think there's a possibility he could. If he's off the charts and he has a great workout, I think he's gone.
Next up is Alan Saunders and then John Keim with ESPN Washington, D.C.
Yeah, what positions do you think are going to be good fits for the Steelers there at 49? And then I wanted to ask you about Dane Jackson from Pitt. We heard some good things from his performance at the Senior Bowl. Where do you see him ending up?
Yeah, Dane Jackson had some impressive games. He was a little inconsistent, but I did like him through the course of the year. He was in my top 10 cornerback group at one point. I'd say, you know, with a good workout, he could be, like I said, with Josiah Scott from Michigan State, third round, at the worst, fourth, fifth round. I think the same for Dane Jackson. I could see third to fifth round for him. In terms of possibilities for the Steelers, like I say, the Minkah Fitzpatrick trade actually turned out pretty well for them, wherein Miami ended up picking. I'd say a wide receiver, running back. They're always looking for a pass rusher. I think that could be a Terrell Lewis from Alabama, only drops down maybe because of the injury. Josh Uche, I think, looks like a Steeler to me, the kid out of Michigan. And if you're looking for a receiving entity or a running back entity at that point, I think you could be looking at Clyde Edwards-Hilaire from LSU, Cam Akers, Florida State. I think Anthony McFarland from Maryland will be a great late-round pick as, go back to when Stephon Diggs came out. His brother Trayvon's in this draft. But Stephon Diggs ended up being like a fifth-round pick because he had the injury. I think because of the injury, McFarland will be a good late round pick. And a receiver, I think Michael Pittman Jr. would be a guy to look at. They got a second round receiver in Juju Smith-Schuster, and Pittman, I think, scouted his father when he came out of Fresno State as a real good running back. I think Pittman could be a good second round pick for somebody.
We'll go to John Keim and then John Crook with the Toronto Sun.
Hey, Mel, what would it take, if you're the Redskins at that number two pick, what would it take to, knowing what you know about Chase Young and how you feel about him, what would it take for you to move out of there to not pick him?
Al, I couldn't hear that question. Could you repeat that again? I lost you for a second.
Sure. Knowing what you know about Chase Young, what would it take, if you're the Redskins, to give up that number two pick and move out of there?
Gotcha. I appreciate that. Yeah, definitely Chase Young. To move out of there would take you get bowled over by an offer. And, if you do, and Chase Young is arguably, and I say arguably because I don't know what teams are thinking, the best player in this draft based on rating, especially with Tua's injury and Burrow having that one great year and people wondering about, well, he doesn't have any arm strength and he doesn't have the enormous frame and all that. But, I would say for Young, a pass rusher who had all those strip sacks and forced fumbles with the strip sack. I think it was 6 or 7 this year. He said he would have had more than that. He might have had 9 or 10 had he finished out the year strong, which he didn't. He was quiet in those last three games. That's why instead of thinking about him at one, Cincinnati obviously has to take Burrow. It would take you're not going to get a quarterback-type offer there because they're the ones that demand the huge offer. But Chase Young, if you get an offer that you just can't refuse, then maybe you think about moving down a little bit, picking up extra choices because this team has a significant number of needs. Other than that, unless you're bowled over by an offer, you take a guy at two who on most boards I think will be the number one player in Chase Young.
We'll go to John Crook and then Christopher Walsh with Bama Central.
Hi, Mel. I want to ask you about a couple Canadians. You've already talked about Chase Claypool from Notre Dame. What are your takes on Oklahoma defensive tackle Neville Gallimore and Ohio QB Nathan Rourke? And if there's any other Canadians on your radar for the draft.
Yeah, Gallimore is a guy who is right now, and that's a pretty good defensive tackle group from a second, third round area. And I moved Justin Madubuike from Texas A&M into that first round to Seattle. Gallimore was a possibility. I think a solid second round pick. He gets penetration. You want defensive tackle. That's what Ross Blacklock from TCU's in that mix. Jordan Elliott, Missouri. James Lynch, Baylor. Raekwon Davis, Alabama. Devon Hamilton, Ohio State. But of all those guys, who are the best at getting into the backfield and being disruptive? And that would be after Derek Brown from Auburn and Kinlaw from South Carolina. I think Madubuike would be next, and then you'd be looking probably at Lynch and Gallimore. And Lynch is more of a 3-4 end. So I think Gallimore with his strength and the fact that he was a guy that I thought really popped in some games. I mean, he really impressed me. So I would think second round for Gallimore.
We'll go to Christopher Walsh and then Andrew Callahan with the Boston Herald.
Thank you. Mel, in your article on Tua, you used the term smokescreen as a possibility with the Lions. What's the biggest smokescreen you've ever seen at a draft?
It's a great question. You think back on some of the things that went on in terms of trades and teams moving up. I remember, that's why I say we're quarterback. Teams move up to get the quarterback. And I just think about, you think about San Francisco sitting there at 2, and they forced the Bears to go from 3 to 2 to get Mitch Trubisky. They ended up with Solomon Thomas. That same year, you're trading up to get Patrick Mahomes, Kansas City did. John Dorsey was the GM who made that move with Andy Reid to make that move to get Patrick Mahomes. They traded up O'Brien did to get Deshaun Watson. So I think that, I don't say smoke screens, but some things you see with quarterbacks now with teams that have picks and say, okay, these picks are valuable because you got to get – that's why I think for the Lions and for the Giants, those two picks are valuable because if you get a very positive medical report on Tua and teams want to move up, that's the spot to go ahead of Miami. And it may even force Miami, as I said, to go up. So I don't think it's any I'd say smoke screen. I think you throw out different things, and if you feel like, okay, we can pass on Jeff Okuda and move down, or we can maybe still get Okuda by moving down, or if the Giants case, we can still get an offensive tackle by moving down, then you think about doing that.
We'll go to Andrew Callahan and then Dave Burkett with the Detroit Free Press.
Hi, Mel. Beyond having the best arm in the class, what do you think makes Eason a good fit here with the Patriots if it's not Eason there at 23? Who are some other players you might like for the Patriots in the first round?
Yeah, that's a good question. I gave Eason to New England as a possibility there or through via trade. So Todd and I have this unwritten rule, which I made the rule, that don't project trades because they distort the whole mock draft. So I never do that. But I do find, well, I said yesterday, well, subtle ways to circumvent the rules isn't always a bad thing. And so that's the kind of way to put it with a team that makes sense, but also figure that there could be somebody trading in there. And that's what usually happens in that 23 to 32 range, where a team will trade in to get that quarterback. Especially later in the first round. We've seen that. So I think that's a possibility where that pick, could be dealt. Somebody could be trading in the late first for somebody to jump in and get Eason. Eason has a rocket arm, and he has imposing size at 6'5", 6'6", 235 pounds. He had some strong performances. Now, he did not have consistent necessarily against elite teams from the first quarter to the fourth. And by that, I mean in the fourth quarter, there's some throws he needed to be more accurate with, some things he needed to do in terms of playmaking in the fourth quarter didn't happen. That's why they lost leads to Oregon and Utah, lost four of their five games by 6 points or less. So he's not perfect. He needs to improve in some areas, but you can't teach the kind of size and arm he has, and that's why I think somebody could look at him in the late first, that worst second round. And if New England didn't take him or didn't trade there, I thought Xavier McKinney from Alabama, the safety, Grant Delpit, safety from LSU, would be two guys to consider at that point.
We'll go to Dave Burkett and then Davis Potter with the Casper Star Tribune.
Hey, Mel, two things. Thanks for the call, as always. But just building off the smokescreen question with the Lions, do you really think they'd have the, gumption or whatever you call it, to take two at three when both Bob Quinn and Matt Patricia are on the hot seat? And then when you're done with that, just a little bit more on Adam Trautman, who you mentioned, what's good Senior Bowl, but what's kind of, holding him out of that top group of tight ends, I guess.
Yeah, in terms of Tua and the Lions, you can always, and I agree, they need to win and all that, and that's important. Tua if you drafted him, that would send a message to ownership to say, hey, you know, we got a quarterback now, could be the heir apparent to Matt. And Matt's had, I think, an outstanding career, you know, coming off an injury. There's a trade possibility there with the money involved. Like I said, you could redshirt Tua, which may be the best, the medical redshirt for that 1 year, may be the best scenario for him moving forward, for his career, and to benefit him moving forward. The trade possibility is, I think, is real there for them or the New York Giants, the Lions Giants at 3-4. In terms of Adam Trautman, yeah, you watch the kid. Just the way he emerged in terms of the position after, you know, the adapting to being a tight end, dominating that level, the hands, the fact that he can, you know, just overpower people at times in the open field, his aggressiveness. I think all those things were on display. So it would not shock me with a great workout to Trout. We saw Adam Shaheen go in the second round, small college kid. Now, he hasn't panned out in the NFL. I think Troutman will. We thought Shaheen had a chance to be a developmental guy, but Troutman's got a higher grade than what Shaheen had. So the second round is not out of the realm of possibility.
We'll go to Davis Potter and then Bennett Conlin with the Daily Progress.
Hey, Mel, what's your assessment of Logan Wilson, the linebacker out of Wyoming, and how his skill set might translate to the NFL? And then what kind of grade do you have on him going into the combine?
He's got a chance. I mean, he's a three-down linebacker. He can run. He's got good range. He was a dominant player for Wyoming throughout his career. You look at what he was able, the numbers he was able to put up are staggering in terms of the tackle numbers. And in college, sometimes you get credit for tackles where you're just in the area or you come in late. But to have the numbers he had, you know, consistently throughout his career to remain durable and as well and to be out there game after game, I think he's got a chance. So with a good workout, he should test pretty well. Well, I think I'll project him right now as a third-round pick. And I have him right now as the fourth or fifth best inside linebacker. Late second to third round for Wilson, I believe. And I'd say, like I said, I think he's gone before day two ends.
We'll go to Bennett and then John Manson with A Sea of Red.
Hey, Mel. I was wondering your thoughts on some of the University of Virginia prospects. I know Bryce Hall sort of stands out. Maybe it's the main guy, but also Bryce Perkins, a quarterback, and Joe Reed, receiver. Just your thoughts on those prospects.
Yeah, I think in terms of Hall, the injury is unfortunate. He could have maybe been in that second-round mix. I think now you're looking at probably day three, I'd say in that fourth, fifth-round area for him. I think Reed's got a chance. I think, you know, to be one of those late-round guys that you know, contributes maybe as a, I wouldn't say undrafted, but probably, depending on how he works out, sixth, seventh-round type player. Perkins, another guy, come in late. We see what Taysom Hill's done in New Orleans. I project Jalen Hurts as a fourth-round pick, as that type of quarterback that can fill a role and give defenses something else to look at. Perkins could maybe be that type of player as well. So a possibility there for late rounds for him. But I would say Hall still, even despite the injury, is their first player drafted.
We'll go to John Manson and then Eric Smith with the Minnesota Vikings.
Hey, Mel, I know you were asked about him a little bit earlier, but Liberty's Antonio Gandy-Golden, where do you see him as maybe his biggest hurdle he needs to overcome to kind of be a starter in the league?
Well, just adapting to playing against big-time corners that lock you down, right? You know, you're not able to physically have a mismatch against anybody. That's really the thing about everybody. It doesn't matter if you come out of Liberty or you come out of Alabama or Ohio State. It doesn't matter. You still have to adjust to that because most teams don't have more than one corner that can really do the job and be at a high level, and some don't even have that. So that's why it's an adjustment when you know that guy right, you know, a yard away is right in your face, and now you got to deal with that. And you haven't had to deal with that before. So, and being able to be precise with your routes and that. So to me, I think that's the adjustment, but I don't think he's getting out of the third round. I think he's just too talented. He had a great year, and he had the Senior Bowl week. So I'd say no later than round three for Antonio Gandy-Golden.
Eric Smith is up, and then Patrick Finley with the Chicago Sun-Times.
Hey, Mel, you had Winfield Jr. to the Vikings at 25 in your latest mock, and you mentioned that you liked his 2019 tape. What exactly did you like about that tape that you've been watching?
Well, first of all, he's a great tackler. He let him in tackles. He gets sacks. They put him in almost like a linebacker role. He can play the center field role. I loved on tape the versatility. He had the 7 interceptions. He returned 1, I believe, for a touchdown. In the game I saw, he had three or four games with over 10 tackles. He was dominant in that Penn State game with a couple picks and 10-plus tackles. He saved the Fresno State game in overtime when he showed great range and hands coming through with that interception in the end zone. 9 career interceptions. He had the injuries, though, and that's the issue. You know, he had 2 separate injuries. He had the hamstring in 2017. And then he had the foot injury in 2018. So, you know, 2016 he's healthy, does a great job. 2019 does a great job. But two years of great play, 2 years of injury is the reason why there's some reservation about moving him up too far, or some hesitancy, I should say. His father was a great player at Ohio State, then in the NFL. This kid has feel. You know about it factor, feel for the game, instincts for the game. That's Antonio Winfield Jr. I have him from the Minnesota. You could have put him somewhere else in the late first. He's not getting past the early to mid-second, in my opinion, and I think he's a definite – he plays like a first-rounder, put it that way.
We'll go to Patrick Finley and then Chris Sims with the Indianapolis Star.
Thanks for doing this again. The Bears have 2 picks in the first half of the second round there. I'm curious if there's a position group that you find particularly deep or where there may be some first-rounders there, specifically even on the offensive line side, and what else you've heard about what the Bears might be interested in.
Well, I think the offensive line is going to be very, I'd say, tricky to try to find somebody, whether it be tackle or guard. More so guard will be easier. Tackle is going to be depending upon your scouting. Do you like, let's say, Matt Peart from Connecticut is a good developmental tackle. Austin Jackson, USC, I know Todd had him in the first. I didn't. I think he needs a lot of technique work. He needs to be much more consistent. We saw what happened when he went up against Epinesa. I think you look at the guard position, you can find guys. And I think I mentioned Ben Bredesen. I think Logan Stenberg from Kentucky is another one. Robert Hunt, Louisiana Lafayette, has versatility. So I think there'll be some linemen if you do a good job in terms of your scouting to find those guys. I mentioned some of the tight ends as well that could be factors in that second or third round mix. But in terms of the linemen, in terms of tackle, I would say Matt Peart from Connecticut, Charles from LSU, and Jackson from USC.
We'll go to Chris Sims and then Jerry McDonald with the Oakland Tribune.
Yeah, thanks, Mel. Just a couple things. You're looking at Kinlaw at 13 for the Colts, and you mentioned a possible cornerback. Who do you think they might take at cornerback, and if do you see defense being a lock? Secondly, who do you feel like the Colts might take with that 34th pick in the second round?
Yeah, I think that when you look at the Colts and you look at what they really need and you go through that team, if they could add a guy like Kinlaw on the defensive line, then get a receiver. And I think a receiver is a critical part of this whole thing, whether it's Brissett or whoever the quarterback may be. And then obviously you can look down the line at a corner. I think, and I'll just throw out some receivers. I think when you look in that era, K.J. Hamler from Penn State, Laviska Shenault Jr. from Colorado would be guys to look at there. If you're looking for corners in that area, a couple guys I really think could be good picks at that point. I think Jalen Johnson from Utah, with his size and his potential, could be a guy. Christian Fulton could very easily fall into the second round out of LSU. Jeff Gladney out of TCU could certainly be in the second round mix. So there's going to be some corners and then round two that have a lot of ability. And also, as I say, some of those receivers I mentioned. But those, I think receiver, you got to find somebody to take pressure off. Which you think about Hilton, you think about all the pressure was on him to be the guy. We'll see what happens with some of the other guys as they emerge. But I think wide receiver, corner, and if they can get a Kinlaw in the first round, that would be a big help.
We'll go to Jerry McDonald and then Evan Bland with the Omaha World Herald.
Hey, Mel, do you think there's any chance that Isaiah Simmons could slip to 12? And if he didn't, would it be worth packaging 12 and 19 to get him? What do you have the Raiders doing?
Well, linebacker's a need, and I just don't think Simmons is going to be there at 12. So, I think you'd have to get ahead of Jacksonville at 9. There's a possibility the Giants could be looking at him at 4. So between 4 and 9 for Simmons. Just a great player, very versatile, which I think that versatility may hurt him a bit because there's not a defined role inside, outside, safety role. He can cover, he can flip the hips and run like a corner safety. We've seen that down the field. We've seen him get after the quarterback, saw that early in the LSU game. So I think think he's going. I have Kenneth Murray going there at 19, linebacker from Oklahoma, and I have him taking Jerry Jeudy, the wide receiver from Alabama, at 12. So you get the linebacker, whether it's Murray or Patrick Queen from LSU at 19, and you get the receiver, be it CeeDee Lamb from Oklahoma or be it Jeudy from Alabama at number 12.
We'll go to Evan Bland and then Ryan Zook with MLive.
Hey, Mel. Nebraska ended its 56-year NFL draft streak last year. It has four prospects at the combine this year, three D linemen and the Davis twins, Darian Daniels, and our corner Lamar Jackson. I'm curious, how would you evaluate that group's draft stock right now? And then as a follow-up, what's the best thing a defensive lineman who's maybe on the fringe of the draft can do to impress teams at the combine?
I'd say as far as the group of Nebraska Cornhusker players, Lamar Jackson, because of the size and the way he played, I mean, he's a big physical corner. He got some versatility there. Like what I saw with him on tape, I think he's more of a fourth, fifth round type of player. I think in terms of Daniels up front, he's got a chance. I think they all have a chance to make a team, but Daniels certainly has an awful lot of ability. But I would say of all the Nebraska players, I would think that Lamar Jackson will be the guy. In terms of a defensive lineman, go to the defensive tackle spot. Robert Windsor, Penn State, when I say late, maybe fourth round for him. Omar Murchison from NC State, maybe later rounds. Maybe when he gets into the day three area, could be a good pick. But I think Windsor, if you look at that fourth, fifth round area, maybe a little higher from Penn State. Let's say Murchison from NC State, more of a day three guy.
Ryan Duke is up, and then Tom Green with AL.com.
Hi, Mel. Wanted to ask you about another Michigan guy. Lavert Hill isn't the biggest corner out there, but he's been Michigan's top corner for a few years now, a lot of experience playing man-to-man. How do you think he fits into this draft?
Yeah, as a cover guy, and as a nickel dime, I think there's certainly, you need four or five corners now, and that's the way the league is. You got to be able to match up in coverage against all these receiving options that teams have. Now, the size and the lack of physicality is important, especially with tackling and being able to be a guy you can trust in that area. When you're one-on-one, you got to be able to make a play and not allow yards after the catch or take down a running back tight end. You got to be able to make those plays in open space, and that's a question about the Lavert Hill. As a cover guy, though, he showed he can get the job done. So with today's the game, the way it's played, I could see him, if he tests great, to end up being in that, I'd say, third to fifth round.
We will go to Tom Green and then Joe Rutter with the Pittsburgh Tribune Review.
Hey, Mel. Wanted to ask you about a couple of Auburn prospects.
Sure.
I saw you had Noah Igbinoghene going late in the first round. What stands out about him as a prospect, especially as a guy who's only played corner for a couple of years? And then where do you see Marlon Davidson going, and just how much has his stock improved over the last year?
Yeah, I think in terms of Igbinoghene, you talk about a guy who's a former receiver, who played well at corner, has the kickoff return experience where he's been dynamic there. It's not as much of a factor as it used to be, but it's still there. So I think it's a plus for him. But the improvement that he showed, the tackling ability got better. I think just his overall awareness and coverage improved to the point where it looks like one of the faster corners in this draft is not the fastest. I think he's a first-round pick. And I think when you look at teams in the late first round, just looking at New Orleans could be a possibility. Minnesota could be a possibility there. You get into the late first, certainly if he was there for Kansas City, I haven't had him going there in Mach 1.0. I think Davidson, the versatility with him, is going to help him. Senior Bowl week obviously did. He got better this year in terms of just the technique and the pass rush moves and all that. I think he's a second-round pick, something maybe first. I think more second-round for him. And then if you look for one of the faster players in the draft, it's going to be cornerback Javaris Davis, from Auburn, who's the cousins both played in the NFL, and certainly he will have a chance as one of the faster cornerbacks to have a shot to make a team as a nickel corner.
We'll go to Joe Rutter and then Bob McManaman with the Arizona Republic.
It looks like Joe has disconnected.
Okay, let's go to Bob McManaman, and then after that, Rick Stroud with the Tampa Bay Times.
Hey, Mel. With Steve Kahn re-signing DJ Humphreys yesterday, three-year deal,
right.
Can you see the Cardinals maybe going a different route than tackle? I know, again, I'm taking Worfs. But what about Jerry Jeudy and CeeDee Lamb? Is that a possibility with Kingsbury-Murray connection there?
Yeah, it definitely is. And I certainly thought about that when I did the mock. And you always you do this type of thing. And yeah, you look at who the worst was a right tackle. And I think that's where you think he played two games at left tackle. Is it a little high for that receiver at eight, you know, Judy or Lamb? You could argue no, that they could be taken that high. And some will even say worse is a little high at eight because there's mixed opinion on him. So, no, I would have no problem at all. And I thought about that with CeeDee Lamb. And, of course, I thought of about Jerry Judy, both those receivers would make sense. So, no, they could go that route, but keep in mind, Wirfs can play right, left. You can always kick your tackles inside the guard. Initially, I mentioned that Ogden and others, that's where they started out their career. So, if they want to protect their franchise in Kyler Murray, you go with the offensive lineman, or if you want to try to give him another weapon, you take Lambert Judy. So, I would have no problem at all if they went wide receiver at eight.
We'll go to Rick Stroud and then Mike Griffith with the Atlanta Journal-Constitution.
Hey, Mel. Just curious where you see the Bucs going at 14. I know O-line, D-line's a concern, and they seem committed to maybe adding a quarterback second or third day. What might be a good fit there?
Yeah, I think if you look at – I'll go real quick to the quarterback thing. If you're looking for, you know, a day two possibility, you know, you're looking at Jake Fromm. You know, Jacob Eason, if he doesn't go in the first, they drop to the second, or Jordan Love from Utah State. But Fromm would be more of the guy that I would pretty much say would be second or third round. Stephen Montez, Colorado, has size, has arm talent, but is very inconsistent, erratic. He would be a day three guy. Cole McDonald, Hawaii, has some arm talent, is a day three guy. James Morgan, Florida International, would be another to throw in there. In terms of Kinlaw, as I said earlier, I think he's a dynamic talent. He can wreak havoc in the backfield, which is important. It wouldn't surprise me if he was gone by 13. If you look at Chaisson, you know, going to Tampa Bay to give them the pass rush, that would be somebody to look at. I think he or Epinesa is pass rushers. Epinesa is a defensive end. Chaisson's an outside backer. So I think Chaisson would be a guy who would fill that void and give them something that they really need.
Unfortunately, we just have time for this last question, but there will be more NFL Draft Conference calls coming up, so please feel free to check in with me if there's anything else I might be able to help you with leading into the combine or in the weeks and months ahead. Please feel free to send me a note or give me a call. We'll go to Mike Griffith.
First of all, thanks a lot, Mel, for doing this. We all appreciate it.
Sure, no problem, Mike.
A couple of first-round Georgia guys and a couple of Georgia linemen. And forgive me if you've already answered. Could you give me some ideas on Andrew Thomas and DeAndre Swift and then on offensive linemen Solomon Kinley and Isaiah Wilson?
Yeah, I have, you know, Kinley, I have a third, fourth-round grade on. Wilson, I have a fourth-round grade on. I thought he should have gone back. If I had Wilson, I would have gone back to Georgia. But Swift, I have going to Miami at 26. He's still the number one running back because he's more complete than the other two in terms of running, catching, and blocking, particularly catching out of the backfield. He's been more reliable in terms of not fumbling the football. So that's why he's the first running back off the board, I think, right around where we saw Josh Jacobs go last year. So I have a 26 to Miami. I have Andrew Thomas at 18 to Miami. I both actually Georgia Bulldogs going to the Dolphins. So Thomas, like I said before, you know, he's still not where he needs to be. He's not a finished product. And at 18, he would be a developmental left tackle, and Swift will be an immediate starter at running back.
To all of our media members, sincere thank you for your patience, for your time today. Like I said, we will have more calls in the future, but if there's anything you might need or you have a question, please feel free to follow up with me. But have a great rest of your day, and thank you.